Sammy Lucas, and I'm Romantically Challenged. Welcome back, or welcome to the podcast. This episode's slightly different to our regular chats. It's more like a mini podcast. It's a follow-up to something that was mentioned in the previous episode with our guest, Nabil. He told me about a tweet he'd seen from a writer, a guy named Alexander James, who said this. Some years back, my wife and I got into the habit of asking, "Do you want comfort or solutions?" when the other person was having a bad time. That one sentence saved us from an argument 9 out of 10 times. Every single person I've spoken to or heard from about that episode references that tweet and that conversation. It's just one of those things that's really resonated with people. So it's definitely worth exploring a little more. Now, before you switch off because you're thinking, wait a minute, I don't have a husband or I don't have a wife, this is relevant to us all. So often we just jump in and try and solve a problem rather than just holding space for the person who's telling you about the issue. We do it with our partners, our friends, our families, even our colleagues at work. So I've called in our resident psychologist and therapist, Rachel Boise, to have a chat about this idea of comfort or solutions. Rachel has the most amazing way of breaking things down and turning psychobabble into everyday speak with real life examples that we can all relate to. So here she is. I hope you enjoy this little mini episode about comfort versus solutions. Rachel, welcome back.
Thanks, Sammy.
Always love having you on, and thanks for taking the time to chat about this. This is so fascinating and it resonated with listeners so much. So I'm really excited to explore this with you a little further. Do you want comfort or do you want solutions?
I think this is one of those things that sounds like it may have been learned in therapy, but I think it comes out of that extension of an idea that most people know about, which is try not to solve, try to listen. You know, try and listen, don't rush in with solutions. Nobody wants solutions. They want somebody to understand how they feel. But it actually sounds a little bit nicer because I think, you know, don't solve, listen gets a lot of eye rolls when you say it in therapy because people always go, yeah, I know I'm not supposed to fix it, but I'm a fixer. I'm a practical person. And you kind of have to try and slow them back down and go, yes, we all are. One of the assumptions about that don't solve, listen thing is I think men assume women are better at it, but actually I think everybody's pretty bad at it. Most people want to rush in and solve. They don't want to listen and understand and soothe.
This tweet and the context of how we spoke about it in the last podcast was from a relationship point of view, but this could also be applied to friendships. I know I stop myself from doing it if I'm talking to a friend and they're having a hard time or they're having a problem with something. And my first inclination is to try and offer them some sort of solution.
Some advice.
And then I have to stop myself and go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
But so this is an interesting topic, not just for people in relationships, but in other areas of life, in work situations as well.
Definitely. And I think if you're listening to somebody at work with a problem where they might actually be just looking for some support and the first thing you do is rush in with an objective kind of solution or some advice, people will often say they don't want unsolicited advice. But when a friend's sharing with you, most of the advice you give is unsolicited. They're not saying, hey, do you know what I could do about this issue? Mm-hmm. They're kind of telling you their experience. And in response to that, what do people do? They give unsolicited advice.
Yeah.
You know, it affects people similarly as friends, colleagues, or partners. But I guess sometimes with partners, because of that primary attachment where that person has a heavier role in your life, it can feel painful when on repeat they keep offering you solutions as opposed to support.
I think most people are coming from a good place when they try to offer advice. If it's someone you care about or love, you want to try and make things better or easier for them.
Yes.
I think that there's nothing wrong with that.
But
you've hit the nail on the head. I guess in a relationship it becomes a bigger issue because it happens more frequently.
It does. And you know what? I use a lot of examples where I have to strip things back to examples of using children and parents to clients because I think sometimes it's easier to understand the building blocks of attachment when you don't think about adults, you think about children and their parents, which we've all obviously been through that experience. What I like about this quote from his guides, he talks about it as comfort, right? So if someone comes to you and they're talking about something, it's normally because they're having some kind of emotional experience, right? And that could be to varying degrees. You know, most things, if you're going, you know, Sammy, I really need to tell you about this thing that happened today, I'm probably to some degree trying to process and soothe myself. And I'm doing that by talking to you. When somebody's a little bit down, the thing you kind of need the person you're talking to do is to drop, almost like drop their affect down a little bit. So if you're feeling a bit sad, you don't want someone to be like, you know what, Sammy, I've got some great advice for you, and be super happy, because you'll be like, this is an example I use often with clients. You see it with parents when their children are upset, or even with anyone if you're around a friend's child. If the child starts to cry, most people will naturally drop their voice, drop their body language, and kind of go, what's wrong? Are you okay? You know, you kind of drop your affect. It's like you tune into a person. And the extension I always use is kind of my little analogy, probably. It seems to cut through to people, but I'll often use the example of when something really bad happens. Let's say you're, you know, 6 years old and you fall over and you bust your knee open and you're bleeding and you think it's the end of the world because all you can see is blood. If your mum comes running towards you, you don't want your mum to run past you to the medicine cabinet to grab the band-aids. The mum will always stop, or the dad will stop, and they'll go, you'll be all right. You're not going to bleed to death. You're going to be all right. They drop, they offer a bit of support, and then you go off and you get the band-aids. You would never run straight for the solution. You always drop, comfort, soothe, reassure, I'm here, it's going to be okay. Then you can go and get your, you can get whatever solution you like, which at that point is probably unnecessary, because what the child needs when it's sad is someone to go, it's okay, I'm here. By the time somebody's soothed, they're normally not really looking for the, you know, advice on how to fix whatever it is that's going on for them. Most people can fix their own problems.
When I saw the kind of reaction that this particular conversation in the last podcast had, I contacted you straight away and said, oh, I think there's an opportunity to explore this. Have you heard of this? And you were like, oh, my God, I talk to couples in therapy about this all the time.
Yeah. Definitely, because most of what people think couples therapy is about communication. But communication, the only reason couples work on communication is because it's a gateway to being connected. Ultimately, what couples are really here for is they want to feel closer to each other. And to do that, we use communication. Actually, what you're trying to teach them to do is how to be there in the right way for their partner to feel supported and loved in the way that you should from a primary attachment figure. Because you really normally have one primary person, and you've got all your friends and your family, but a partner normally has that little bit of extra special significance. So what you're doing in couples therapy all the time is trying to get people to do exactly this. When I need you, how do you show up for me? And if you're going to show up for me with a laundry list of, you know, what I should do to solve my problem, I'm probably going to feel pretty alone and misunderstood, because you're not really there for me. You're just telling me how maybe you think you're a bit smarter than me, or you can figure this out. And it's really, when you're feeling emotional, you're not even in the right kind of brain to take information in. You're not in an integrative learning relational brain. You're in a like, oh my God, is this not great kind of brain that isn't in place to learn.
Do you agree with this idea of asking the other person, do you want comfort or solutions? Mm. I mean, it's a bit of an awkward, clunky thing to say.
Exactly.
Right? Like, so you can't just go, would you? Okay, let's assess here. Would you like me to give you comfort or solutions?
Yeah.
Are you really going to do it?
It could be a bit irritating, like all these things. I mean, I'm not sure if this guy is American or Australian. Or
American.
He's American, right? So Americans are probably better at actually hearing that. A lot of Australians, you know, when someone says something like that, will either feel maybe like they've been a little bit patronized, or it's therapy speak. Like, actually, I think what it does is more for the person who's listening than it is for the person who's upset. It almost reminds that person that they probably need to deliver comfort, not solutions. I think it's a, you know, I think it's a great frame on things to have when you're trying to support a partner or a friend. But is it something you're necessarily going to say? Maybe not. But I think there's been nothing wrong with having some version of this where you make it your own. Like, what do you need right now? Do you want me to work it through with you, or do you want me to just, do you want to just tell me more about it? I always say to people, when people need advice, they will ask for it. If I can't figure it out, and like, Sammy, can you just work this through with me? I will ask you that.
Yeah, I do that too with friends. Like, yeah. I will actually bring friends and say, I need your advice about something.
Exactly. People are much better asking for advice than comfort, right?
Yes.
It's a lot easier for me to ring you and say, Sammy, can you help me with this terrible mess I've made on my website? You're much better than this, than me to ring you and go, Sammy, I woke up this morning, I just feel like I can't do this day. The first one is much easier to do than the second. People will be, you know, they will struggle to ask for the kind of comfort they need. So if you can be the kind of partner that can hold space, slow things down and try and understand, it's a pretty incredible thing to be able to do for somebody.
One of the key things in this tweet, this guy said, asking his wife, do you want comfort or solutions, managed to avoid an argument 9 out of 10 times. Why does it make us so angry when someone just jumps in and tries to offer solutions or tries to give us answers? Why does that bother us so much?
It does lead to an argument very often when you feel your partner's not understanding you, as if they're coming in too fast with their assumptions. But what I think also creates quite a few arguments when you offer solutions as opposed to comfort is it plays into one of these levels that comes out of the research of the Gottman Institute on couples, which is one of the things you see in happy couples is this, Gottman's call it a fondness and admiration level, but what the idea of it is when you're in a happy relationship, you'll feel like your partner respects you, admires and likes you as a person. They don't just love you as a partner. Like the amount of times I've heard people say in therapy, I know she loves me, but I don't think she likes me very much.
Yep.
When you give a lot of unsolicited advice to your partner, I actually think it affects this fondness and admiration level because it's almost making the partner feel like they can't do it and you can. It kind of plays into this definition that we talk about in couples therapy called contempt, which is like judgment and criticism at the same time. It's a little bit like, I know the way here and you don't, which is not a great way. You really want to feel like your partner is empowering you to be your best self, not managing you or running you. It's not a performance review. You don't need, you know, it's not at work where you need somebody to tell you how to do it better. So I think when you offer too many solutions or too much advice, often people get defensive actually, and they start going, oh yeah, no Sammy, I know, I've already tried that, but you didn't let me finish telling you. No, you're not getting me here, Sammy. And you can see how if we were a couple, very quickly you could be like, well, actually, Rachel, I do get what you're saying. I'm like, no, actually you don't, because again, you're just telling me what you would do. Can you see in 5 minutes how we could be starting to argue? Because I'm feeling misunderstood. You're feeling, you know, like I'm being ungrateful for your advice. I'll get defensive, then I'll feel judged, and off we go. And by the time we get into the argument,
you don't even know what you're arguing about.
Whereas how do you do comfort wrong, right? If I'm like, what, you know, I'm just sitting with you, listening to you, and actually maybe like telling you that actually really sucks. I'm sure you'll work it out, what do you need, and letting you tell me what you need. We're not going to start to argue because you're not going to feel like I'm judging, criticizing you, or, you know, rolling over the top of what you're trying to tell me.
So if the person wants comfort, what does that look like?
Yeah.
How can you provide comfort?
Yeah, and this is the part where people always get sarcastic about it. They go, okay, so what I just need to take from this therapy session is I'm just going to sit here and nod. That's all I'm going to do while she talks. Is that what you're telling me to do? Being comforting and holding space is not about sitting there like a brick wall or just letting things bounce on and off you. It's about trying to actually ask the right questions, tune into what the person's saying. If you need to cry, it can be physical. A lot of physical reassurance is nice. Someone just putting a hand on your leg or an arm around you.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, maybe saying, you know what, it has been a really shit day. Should we get a glass of wine? Do you want, you know what, stuff dinner, let's go for a walk, let's get out of here and go down to the pub. That's comfort. It's like, what can I do to make you feel like your load is a little bit lighter? And whether that's listening and talking or distracting, that's still very different to giving advice, right? People can understand how to do comfort when grief is present. So, you know, if somebody's mother dies, everybody will know you're not going to, there is nothing, there's no solution. Or if you're at someone's bedside who's unwell, you're not the doctor, so you can't start, you know, prescribing meds. So what do? You sit there, you have a chat, maybe you bring them a meal, maybe you make them laugh, maybe you let them tell you about how they're feeling. But there's nothing you can actually do. So I actually kind of think putting that frame around it is sometimes useful. If someone's just not feeling good and there's nothing you can do, what do you still do to be a really beautiful friend or partner? You're just there, right?
Yeah, just being there. And I love that term we've talked about it before, just holding space for someone.
Remember, attachment theory always comes back to it starts from the time you're born with your parents. And what do children want? They just want mum and dad to be there. They just, when you test cortisol levels in babies, they're at their lowest when mum and dad are around. Not because mum and dad are doing anything, but because it's like the people I love are here. And that is exactly the same thing in adults. You do not need to do anything. Just knowing that I love you, you are here, my stress hormones will drop. But if you're going to start an hour-long analysis of what I need to do with my problem, my cortisol level is going to go back up.
Mm-hmm. Is it ever appropriate to start dishing out advice and trying to offer solutions? I mean, it comes from a good place mostly.
It does, but I think that people will ask you. I think don't give unsolicited advice. That is just a good thing to always remember in every situation. People will normally ask you if they need practical help. And I think at the end of offering comfort, there's nothing wrong with asking, do you want me to work this through with you? Like, is there something specific I could help you with on this? But you ask, you don't start in an unsolicited way. As soon as they say yes, then off you go. And if they say, no, you know what, I just need to think about it a bit more, or you know what, I just can't think about it anymore today, which I know I often say when I've had a bad day and I'd like say something in the car on the way home to a friend and they're like, do you want to talk about it? I'm like, I just absolutely do not want to talk about it right now.
Yes.
So that thing of, well, is like, do you want to talk about it now? Or if you want to work it through tomorrow, I can do that. Right now I'll just be with you. I'll just even be on the other end of the phone to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So without getting caught in the trap of stereotyping,
mm-hmm.
there is this assumption that men do have this habit of kind of jumping to offer solutions or trying to fix problems, which causes a lot of arguments in relationships. Do you think that is true? Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, it's really, like, if I really went on balance from what I see in my job and in the room, I would really say that it's fairly equal. I think that when you see someone distressed, both women and men jump in with advice. The only thing I think that may kind of mitigate that and might lead to that assumption is sometimes I think it is a stereotype that women are more comfortable around emotions and feelings, like they can sit with them without feeling so uncomfortable. Sometimes I think, you know, men are not, well, not traditionally, weren't socialized as much to deal with feelings, but I think that has changed so much now that I think it's probably, you get as many pragmatic women as pragmatic men that do not like talking about feelings. Some people, it's more like an attitude. What's your attitude to people's feelings? If you've got an attitude that feelings are useful, I'm much more likely to be able to provide comfort. If I'm like, oh, my God, Sammy's sad, what's the quickest way I can get her back to being happy, then I'm probably more likely to try and push your feelings down, give you some solutions and cheer you up as opposed to let you be whatever you need to be right now.
Well, thank you so much. As always, you're brilliant. And it was exactly what I expected for this little mini podcast, was just to explore that one little sentence, or I guess you could call it a relationship saver.
Yeah.
Do you have one other you can leave us with? Like, are there any other little relationship savers?
Well, I think the relationship, things that are relationship savers, they always just resonate for all of us because we all know that's what we'd love to be in a relationship with, somebody who just give us some comfort. And the other thing that I think people really love in relationships is somebody who makes them feel appreciated. If someone gives you that gratitude, appreciation, and tells you why you're special and why they love you, that is a huge relationship saver. But again, a really hard one for people to do. It's hard to say positive things to your partner sometimes. It can feel much more difficult than giving a criticism or a constructive remark. So giving appreciation and gratitude about the reason you love your partner and giving some feedback, that's a massive relationship saver. And then the second one would be just in the face of issues, don't make your partner feel criticized and judged. If you can say things in a way that is supportive and you can give, you know, lots of love and reassurance without making them feel criticized and judged, you can probably save your whole relationship. It's really, really hard to do. People think they don't do it until they actually listen to themselves. But if you can really make your partner feel respected and admired and liked and loved, you're on to a winner.
Oh, God, you're good. Thank you for making time to share some of your worldly advice with us.
It's a pleasure. It's a great thing to talk about. Thanks, Sammy.
This podcast is produced and presented by me, Sammy Lucas. Audio director is the marvellous Robbie Wood. You can find out more about Rachel or book an appointment to see her via her website, relationshiproom.com.au. And you can find out more about me or this podcast at my website, sammylucas.com.